Boy, there are few things better in life than teriyaki spam. That is some good stuff. Hey, you have in front of you a handout, and it's a front and a back. So it says, whoa, you're going to cover a lot of information. We are. And you got to get your pencil out. You got to write down fast. But this is stuff that is good. It's called Speed of Trust. So I'll talk twice as fast as I usually do so we can cover all the information here. It is a book called Speed of Trust, The One Thing That Changes Everything. And today we talk about relationship trust. Last month we talked about self-trust. And so today we're talking about behaviors that help you to build trust in a relationship. This can apply to your work, and it can apply to your personal life. At the very front, it says, there is one thing that is common to every successful and thriving individual, relationship, team, and organization, and that one thing is trust. Now, just a review from last week. That's the very first blanks you got. Trust is a function of character. That is doing the right things. And competence, get the right things done. Trust is a function of character. That's when you do the right thing, and then competence to get the right things done. Relationship trust is all about behavior, and it's consistent behavior. It's about learning how to interact with others in ways that will increase trust and avoid interacting in ways that destroy trust. And so in the book, it identified 13 behaviors, but lo and behold, I have no time for 13, so I said, let's choose 8. And so today we're going to look at 8 behaviors that are common to high-trust leaders and people throughout the world. And all of this grows out of that tree that we showed you last week, and it's the 4 cores of credibility. Integrity, it's the roots that are below the system. Then as the trunk begins to come out, it's the intent. What's the intent that a person has? Is it just for them, or is it what's best for the organization? And then capabilities are the branches, and the results are the leaves. And so character is your integrity and intent, your competence are your capabilities and results. And so these behaviors come out of both competence and character. And so it is the way you build trust is you build it through action. And I like an illustration, and it is making deposits in a trust account. And you make deposits into a trust account, and you make withdrawals from the trust account. So when you're trying to build relationships with people, you need to be putting deposits into that trust account so you can build that trust. But we also do stupid things that are like withdrawals that will come out of a trust account. Now, the thing about this to keep in mind, and it is so true, is that withdrawals are typically larger than deposits. One of the illustrations is making deposits in a trust account is like a big bucket and water slowly drips in it, and you slowly build trust. Withdrawals, you can kick the bucket over and all the water pours out that quick. Warren Buffett made this statement. He says, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it. 20 years to build a reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it. So the quickest way to decrease trust is to violate character. And the quickest way to increase trust is to demonstrate a behavior of competence. So character will lose trust. And if you want to try to build trust, then if you show actions of competence, that can usually help you build up the trust, okay? But you need both. You need character and you need competence. So let's take a look at the eight behaviors today. Number one is talk straight. Talk straight. Tell the truth and leave the right impression. Talk straight. It means tell the truth and leave the right impression. It means communicate so clearly that you cannot be misunderstood. Have you ever been in a conversation with a boss or a fellow worker or with a spouse to where you shared something and they just didn't get it? It just wasn't clearly communicated. To build trust, you try to communicate as clearly as possible. Like, for instance, if you're giving formal feedback to someone who works for you, you share with them, these are the expectations. This is what needs to be done. Now, the way you've handled your job this past year has not been up to standard. So you need to do this, this, this. If you don't, the result is you'll be fired. And somebody said, ooh, that's a little tough. Well, that's just life. That's real life. That's where you need to talk straight and let people know the seriousness of this situation. I don't want to be misunderstood. These are the expectations that you have. So on the flip side of that, it means you refuse double talk, withholding information, posturing, spinning in order to manipulate people's thoughts, feelings, and actions. And it just means you're not going to be two-faced. You just talk straight. You know, Abraham Lincoln, many people will say, is one of our greatest presidents. He will not go down as one of our best-looking presidents. I think every picture that you've seen on him. And somebody accused him of being two-faced, and his statement was this: if I were two-faced, would I be wearing this one? Great comeback. All right. We all abhor spin, and is anybody here running for an office? Don't want to slam any politicians over here, but most politicians get a pretty bad rap because they're more spin than just talking straight, and that's why some people say, I just don't know if I can trust that person. Well, you build trust when you just talk straight, okay? But then the second part of that is you temper this with tact and consideration. Temper with tact and consideration. You've all worked with or have known the guy said, well, I just tell it like it is. I just tell it like it is. Well, you don't need to always just tell it like it is. You got to have a little bit of tact, a little bit of consideration. Every husband in relationship, when your wife says, do I look fat in this dress? You got to have tact and consideration. All right. How do you answer that question? All right. So number two, demonstrate respect. Demonstrate respect. Synovus Financial Corporation is a company that for years upon years was voted as the greatest place to work. And, you know, they do these surveys and they determine some of the best places to work. I'm pretty sure Delta Airlines won that. I've flown Delta constantly and they've always got that sign out there, voted in 2017 the best place to work or so. But Synovus Financial Corporation, they interviewed their chairman, James Blanchard. And they asked him, they said, why is your company like others? How do you both succeed in the marketplace and you're such a great place to work? And just very simply, he said, it's how you treat folks. It's how you treat folks. And this is the second thing he said, and that's your first underline. It says, the key is how you value the worth of an individual. The key is how you value the worth of an individual. And then that is how you will treat people. And then there was a statement next to it called the waiter rule. Waiter. And what that is how does a person treat the waiter? A person who really has, is not high up in the organization, and when you go to the restaurant and you sit there, how do you treat the waiter? And oftentimes, when you're interviewing people, you take them out to the meal, you just watch how they interact with the waiter. And the waiter rule is, if they don't treat the waiter with respect, then if you hire them and bring them into your corporation, will they treat people in that company the same way they treated that waiter and in all the different levels? And I thought about that waiter rule. That's a lot of truth to that. Back when I was single and I just started working at a telephone company, there was getting ready to be a strike that AT&T was going to strike, and the union was in negotiations with management, and they couldn't get the contract squared away, so they said, looks like we may strike. So they take all the management people, and they send them all around the state to handle some of those responsibilities. And so I was tabbed to go to Huntsville to be a long-distance operator, and I went through the training and really loved it. I hated the fact they called the strike off, but we went up there, and as we got up there, there was our group, and some of these folks I didn't even know, and there was a real attractive girl that was up there, and there was another guy that was hitting on her. And so while he's hitting on this girl, there's about six of us in this group. We said, let's go get something to eat. So we go to get something to eat. So we go to this restaurant. We step into this restaurant. It's packed, you know, and this guy comes up, and he's huffing and puffing, and he's saying, well, hey, we need a seat for tables for whatever so often. And Maitre D says, well, it's going to be at least a 30-minute wait. Well, he just lit into her. I mean, he just, hey, we're going somewhere else and all that stuff. Well, and he walked off. I circled around and apologized. I said, hey, I just want to tell you, that was uncalled for. And I said, we understand this, and we just appreciate it. Hope you have a great night or so. All right, so that girl who was getting hit on by him, you know, next day, I'm getting ready to drive back to Birmingham. Says, I'll ride back with you. She did. I asked her out next week, and we've been married 40 years. So, the waiter rule, it works. All right. So I'm telling you, good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Are you ready? Okay. B, behave in ways that show fundamental respect for people. Behave in ways that show fundamental respect for people. You can just write next to that the golden rule. Everybody hopefully has heard of that, you know. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Show that respect. And last of all is demonstrate care and concern. If you really want to put a deposit in a trust account, you demonstrate care and concern. There's respect that you have for people. And then you go an extra step and you show a care and concern for them. And when you do that, you're depositing in the trust account. All right? Number three is this, right wrongs. Right wrongs. That means you make right anything that you've done that is wrong. And so if you've done something that is wrong, you need to make it right. And the way you do that is, first of all, is you apologize. And you do it quickly, humbly, and sincerely. Quickly, humbly, and sincerely. Now, I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but I'm thinking most of us have probably been in situations where somebody did something wrong, and after a long amount of time, they finally came back and said they were sorry. Did that mean as much? You know, to me, as soon as you realize you've done wrong, you need to quickly apologize and say, whoa, that's my bad. I messed up on that. Humbly and sincerely. And that's the way you right a wrong. It's not just, hey, I just wrote you a note and said, hey, I'm sorry on that. But it's quickly, it's humbly, and it's sincerely. But then the second part of that is to make restitution when possible. Make restitution where possible. And so if there's something that you've done that has caused a loss of something, then you turn around and you make restitution wherever that's possible and say, hey, let me cover that. It was my mistake. When you right a wrong, you find yourself making deposits into a trust account. Because everybody makes mistakes, and everybody at times will get somebody a little teed off in a relationship or say something wrong or do something wrong. But it's how quickly you come back and say, you know, I was wrong on that, and I apologize, and that was a wrong thing for me to say or a wrong thing for me to do. And if you show humility and there's sincerity there, then oftentimes you have strengthened your relationship. It's an amazing number of people that will tell you their story. And it was, well, how were you good friends with this person over here? Well, we had a falling out. And then yet there was this forgiveness that took place and this apology. And it's like we came even tighter. And so when you think about this righting the wrongs, let me show you how important that is. Probably the two scriptures that people quote the most anywhere you go would be the 23rd Psalm, Lord is my shepherd, and the Lord's Prayer. And oftentimes people recite the Lord's Prayer. And it's a beautiful prayer, but when you get in the middle of it, it says, and forgive us our sins, and we also have forgiven those who sin against us. Forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. Forgive us our trespasses, we forgive those who trespass against us. What that means is, God, I want you to forgive me the same way I'm forgiving other people. Are you really serious about praying that prayer? Think about that. And then Jesus, when he finishes the Lord's Prayer, the very next two verses, he says, for if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. And so, biblically, we need to right those wrongs. And it says that when we're praying, looking for forgiveness, and we've done something wrong, God may bring someone to your mind and say, well, what about this guy or this gal that you've offended? You need to go and forgive them. Or things they've done to you, you need to forgive them. And so you need to straighten those relationships out. We need to right the wrongs on there, okay? Number four is show loyalty. Show loyalty. Loyalty is huge deposits in the trust account. And one of the ways to show loyalty is to give credit publicly and consistently. Give credit publicly and consistently. That is that you give credit to the people who did the work. Sometimes whoever gives the report sometimes gets the credit. You need to be sure that you share who it is that did this and affirm their contribution on there. Now, when you do this, When you say, this person did a great job, this person gets credit for this, you know what you just done for them? You make them feel better because they realize that whatever they're doing has a positive impact, and it encourages them to continue, and it encourages collaboration. I mean, if this table right here, the four of us worked on something, worked on this incredible project, and it came out, and I got to do the report on it, saying, this is what we've done, this is what's been accomplished, and I didn't give any credit to you guys, then the next time there's a collaboration on a project, I don't think you're going to be real happy about working with me on that. But if I can be one who gives credit where credit is due and to do it publicly, then there's a greater sense of collaboration, and then people feel like that they're worth, that what they're doing, their work, is seen as something that is acceptable and brings value to the corporation. So give others credit publicly and consistently. Window and mirror. Jim Collins, in his book Good to Great, says that every leader has got a window and a mirror. And when things go good, you look out the window and you see all those people who made it happen. And you look out over the landscape and see all the people that made that happen, and then you give them the praise on that. When things don't go well, then you take a look in the mirror. And when you take a look in the mirror, you begin to look and say, what are some things that I could have done different? What are things I could have done better so that we wouldn't have this failure over there? Does that make sense? You got your window and you got your mirror. And we need to be all looking in the mirror and say, what are some things that we can do better on this? And the second is this: speak about others as if they were present. You say, what do you mean? Speak about others as if they were present. The author, Stephen Covey, said when he was working at a company, they would all go to lunch. And so this group went to lunch, and they're talking about work and everything. And then a couple of them had to leave. And everyone around the table started talking about those two people that left. And then about 10 minutes later, a couple other people had to leave. The group talked about those two folks that left. And I love what Stephen Covey says. I made a goal right then, last guy to leave. And he said, because I don't want them talking behind my back. And what that means is that if they're talking behind your back, if they're talking behind someone else's back, you realize they're going to talk behind your back too. And all of a sudden, that's a withdrawal out of trust. You speak about others as if they were present. You speak about others if they were right there and were present with you. All right, number five is this, and that is deliver results. Deliver results. The fastest way to build trust with a new client is to deliver results. And if you're developing a relationship with a new client, everybody wants to see some results. So you deliver results. When you do that, you begin to build up that competency, and there is trust that is being built. I need to see something positive that's coming out of this. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow made this statement: we judge ourselves by what we feel capable of doing, while others judge us by what we've already done. And oftentimes we walk in and say, hey, but I'm capable of all of this. Well, they're looking at it and say, well, what have you done for me today? I want to know, what have you done? I need some kind of results. And so for us to develop trust, we need to see results. And when people are bringing in results, man, that trust builds up more and more on there. And any person that's ever been held to results and had to meet a quota or whatever, you know that when those results are being met, then all of a sudden that boss has got more confidence in you on there and is going to trust you even more, all right? So what does it mean on deliver results? First of all, it means you convert the cynics. Nothing better than delivering results to be able to convert the cynics, those that don't believe in you and maybe those that aren't sure if they can trust you. I can just speak to you as a pastor that as you come into a church, not everybody embraces you and says, oh, we trust you and we're excited about you. Nah, there's always folks that are going to wonder and go, I'm not so sure. You pretty well got to prove yourself. When I was pastor in Ruston, and I may have told the story before that as I got there, one of the men came to me and said, there's a guy that you should put on the finance committee. His name's Ben Haley, and he's a doctor here in town. He used to be real involved. He's not that involved now, but it would be good. Well, His wife did not like me at all. I was a lot more conservative to where she stood in her theology and some other things, and she was not a happy camper. She never smiled. She just didn't like me, okay? So, and then I didn't think he really liked me much. And he said, but you need to put him on the committee. I said, okay. I'll take a chance. So I put him on the finance committee. Now, there's a lot of things I don't know, folks. But there's one thing I do know pretty well, and that's numbers. And I pored over our financials to where I probably knew the financials of that church better than anybody at that time. This guy comes on the committee, and we got a committee of about 7 or 8 people. And every month we had that meeting, he asked me questions about everything on that sheet, almost every expenditure. I mean, he is just coming after me. But I knew the answers, and I would answer it, and I'd answer it, and answer it, and answer it. And so the first year went through. Then we came back for the second year. And when the second year came and we began to have our financial meetings, he would begin to back off a little bit. And then he would look at me, and something would come up, and he said, so can you explain to me why this, and do you think this is a good idea? And all of a sudden, we began to see that I was sort of converting the cynic. And then we came to the third year, and I made him the chairman. And all of a sudden, that year, whenever something came up, he'd just look at me, and he'd say, Pastor, what do you want to do? So it went from, I'm going to question you on every single thing you've done, to all of a sudden now says, hey, Pastor, what do you want to do? And we went into our first capital campaign, and I put him in charge of it, and he and his family made one of the larger gifts of it just because they said, we believe in where we're going and believe on that. You convert your cynics. You convert your cynics by results. And so when you deliver the results, people say, okay, I've built some trust level on there. And his wife got to like me afterwards. I just want to let you know that for that. And here's a story I'm going to tell, but I'll probably get in trouble, so I won't tell that one on there. But let's just put it this way. She and I got on the same page, and it was great. It was great. So great, great family. All right, next. Thoroughly understand the expectations. Thoroughly understand the expectations. When we talk about delivering results, you need to know what the expectations are. And so I got to know if I'm going to hit the mark or not. So whenever you're in a situation where somebody says, I'm looking for results, you need to ask the questions, specify what the expectations are so I know if I can hit the mark. Number three, anticipate needs before you are asked. Anticipate needs before you're asked. If you get to this point, you are flying high, folks. If you can get to the point where you know the organization and you know the people that you're working with and you anticipate a need before it's even asked, that's gold, all right? That builds trust. Number six, get better. Get better. One of the things to behavior that you need to do in order to build trust is don't just stay where you are. Get better. Stretch yourself. And how you do that, number one, you seek feedback. You seek feedback. But we got some really creative people on our staff over here. And I just love the fact that anything that we do, whatever project, they always seek feedback. Tell me what you thought about this. Tell me about that. And as you seek that feedback, then you begin to get even better. Then you get to the second one. That means learn from your mistakes. Learn from mistakes. Don't ever waste a failure. I've had plenty. And whenever something didn't work, you just want to learn from it. So you just say, okay, we don't need to do that again. All right, what did we learn from that? And then last is take risk and empower others to take risk. In order for you to get better, you got to take a risk. And then you empower others. When they see you, let's say you're the manager and you take a risk, it empowers others to take a risk. And you take away the fear of failure and say, you may fail on this, but I want you to take the risk. I want you to take the leap. I want you to stretch yourself, and I want to allow others to take those risks. The only way you get better is to take some risk along the way, all right? Number seven, confront reality. Confront reality. That means taking the tough issues head on. There are tough issues, whether it be in a personal relationship or in an organization, and you don't ignore it. You got to take it head on. Two ways of doing that, you name the elephant in the room. Name the elephant in the room. You've been in meetings to where there's this elephant in the room, or you've been in an organization where there's been this elephant in the room, and you can't just keep ignoring it. It's uncomfortable, but you need to confront it. And then the second one is address the sacred cows. Address the sacred cows. Those are things that people say, ooh, this can never be changed. Well, sometimes you got to address them. I think somebody wrote a book that said sacred cows make the best burgers. And so, and there is some truth to that. And but you got to address those. Now, those are two animals that we don't want to deal with. We don't want to name the elephant in the room, and we don't want to kind of mess up the sacred cow. But you got to address them. You got to talk through them. And that's the only way that you can move forward on there. And last of all is this, listen first. Listen first. And that means to really listen and to seek to understand another person's thoughts, their feelings, their experience, and their point of view. But do it first before you start bloviating with all of your agenda. You need to listen first. And the opposite of that is for you just to speak up first and not listen to them. One of the greatest trust deposits you can make is when a person feels like they're being listened to. And you sit down with them and just listen to them. And I put two things down here. Number one, focus on the other person, their tone of voice, and their body language. This is more than just listening with your ears. This is a total listening. Focus on that person. Look them in the eyes. Pick up on the tone of voice. Pick up on the body language. This is why email is so dangerous. You agree with that? When someone sends you an email and you read it, what do? You try to figure out, okay, now, is this happy? Is this mad? Exactly what do they want? And then a lot of conflict is taking place because we misunderstood the tone of an email. It's so difficult. But when you sit down with a person one-on-one and get to look them in the eyes, you pick up on tone of voice, you pick up on the body language, and you listen to them first. Don't start and just say, well, this is what it should be. No, listen to them first. And last of all, it streamlines conflict resolution. It streamlines conflict resolution. If we just listen, it can keep us from so many mistakes. Because once you hear a person's side, and they tell their side of the story, and they talk about that issue, then all of a sudden you've got a better understanding. And when you get a better understanding, then it means that you can work together better. When you can work together better, it's because you've just made a deposit into a trust account, and that trust account continues to build. And then you have these strong relationships with people. These are great behaviors, and they're universal. And so if you just look at those eight and say, I want to do this in all of my relationships, then you'll have stronger relationships on there. Every young pastor that goes to a church, I tell him the same thing when he says, what should I do? And I say, well, for your first year, you need to listen to the people. You need to learn from the people. You need to love on the people. And then you lead with the people. But it starts out with listening. You listen to the people. Hear their story. Hear the story of that church. You learn from them. And then after you've learned from them, you just love on them. And then once you've listened and you've learned and you love, then you can go that next step, and that is you lead with the people. Don't run ahead while bring them along with you. And what you're doing is you're making deposits in that trust account, and then the people will trust you, and then you're in for a really good ride along that way. Okay? Does that make sense? Behaviors. Let's do trust. There's one thing that we can always take to the bank, and that is to trust in the God who created us. And to know that the God that created us loved us so much that he sent his own son, Jesus Christ, to die on the cross for our sins. And when he was raised from the dead 3 days later, conquering death and conquering sin, he has provided us a way to come into a right relationship with God. And what he asked you and he asked me is, will you trust me? Will you trust me? Will you put your trust in me? Will you sort of walk across that bridge and show that trust that you have? I hope that as you look at these behaviors of trust, that you can make certain that you've put that trust into Jesus Christ. And then when you've done that, it means you're born again, you're adopted into God's family, and you get to live for him and live with him, not only here in earth, but also for eternity. So hope you take that with you. All right, guys, I want to tell you, it's been a great day. We look forward to seeing you next month. Thank you very much.